Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Now, Project Baby, stay in Calabasas.
Why'd you say it like that? That's what he said.
Live from ESPN Studios in New York City, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Alan Hahn in for Max. And like I said, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. Protecting your business with specialized coverage for your commercial vehicles, Key. More at progressivecommercial.com. So last night, Jay, you were in the building, right? You were at Barclays. You were there for the show?
Yes.
You had, early in the season, a little clash of the Titans, the Warriors, who look like they're back, and Steph Curry looking like a guy ready to run for the MVP. Kevin Durant leading the league in scoring.
Steph Curry is the MVP.
Okay.
He is MVP.
And so we had a great matchup last night, and what we heard were MVP chants, but they weren't for Kevin Durant. They were for Steph Curry. How'd you feel about that?
Well, they were for Kevin Durant in the first half.
Then that third quarter happened.
And then the Kevin Durant MVP chants got drowned out by the Stephen Curry.
How do you know chants. Who they're chanting for when they're just chanting MVP?
Well, because it was when KD had the ball shooting for free throws.
All right.
But I would say last night kind of gave me a bigger question about the whole scenario here. It was embarrassing for the Barclays Center last night. It was embarrassing for the Barclays Center last night.
Why?
And I get that Steph is the very likable person. I understand that. But it didn't feel like there was any home court advantage. When I go to MSG, last year during the playoffs, home court advantage. You feel it. Now, you may not agree or like everything that goes down with people spitting at Trae Young or whatever it may be. But there is an energy there where you know you don't got a chance to own this home court. This is ours. It doesn't feel that way when you go to the Barclays Center. Now, I'm a New Jersey Net fan. I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan. I told you guys this. Everybody knows this. Just hearing that, and I know that Steph gets love, but hearing the fact that Nets fans would let Golden State fans drown them out with MVP chants gives me the impression that this is going to be a problem as we get deeper into playoff basketball here. Saw it a little bit last year with Giannis and company. It's just something to pay attention to that I think is a problem.
Alan Hahn, you call Knicks games. You are a Knicks fan. Would Stephen Curry have gotten louder MVP chants in the Garden?
If he knocked down 9 threes, went for 37, he would get MVP chants at the Garden.
But who on the Knicks are you comparing to be MVP?
No, I know. Well, the only guy that gets those chants is Julius Randle.
Okay, but like we all know realistically, Julius Randle is not in that conversation.
I think it's a New York thing, man. It's a New York thing. There'll be a bigger walk-up because it's the Warriors and Steph Curry in both buildings. Because this is a basketball city.
Let me ask you
this.
But
I also think that Steph going to get that wherever he go, though.
He's one of two in the league that I think gets treated this way.
It's like, you know, the daughter, the family. It's just Steph.
Yeah.
I love
Steph, too.
Steph is
a beast.
He can't do anything wrong for the fan base.
Maddening, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, you get players that are like that. You do.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Hahn, diehard Knicks fan.
Mm-hmm.
If Damian Lillard came to New York and he were a Knicks player, do you still think we would be hearing MVP chants or Steph in the Garden? See, those are just you thinking about that for a second.
No, that's what you said.
Because there hasn't been a player of that magnitude for the Knicks.
Michael Jordan came back, dropped 45.
Knicks fans wouldn't do it.
Double nickels.
They wouldn't do it.
He had those games when he came back from his hiatus. The crowd buzzed, it cheered, but it never did that. Because it still was you were the opponent. I'll give you that.
That's my thing.
But that's what Brooklyn's dealing with. By the way, welcome to New York.
Think of it, though.
You're walking in your building doesn't get filled yet by all your fans because you just don't have
that's
that.
Why, that's
you
know the problem.
You know what's so funny, though?
Well, maybe KD shouldn't have gone there, as we know.
It's so funny about that, though. I said he probably wouldn't get it in L.A.
No, he wouldn't, Key.
I don't think he would get it in L.A. I don't think he would get an MVP chance in L.A. We would appreciate watching him.
Clippers, yes.
No, Clippers, that's not L.A.
Yes.
That's not L.A., though. That ain't.
Hang on.
They just renting a building or something.
When it was all the kids, when it was Lonzo and all those young guys.
No, he still wouldn't have got it. The Lakers weren't going to do that, though. The
Laker fans were going to sell tickets to the Warriors fans who would have filled the building, which is what happened in Barclays last night. You have people reselling tickets.
We don't do that. No, we don't. We don't do that.
But you know how disrespectful that would be for Kobe Bryant?
First of all, We're not selling tickets to another team's fans to fill our arena. This is that's not what
the
Lakers do.
The problem is that happens here in New York all the time because they're so expensive and you want to get money back, so you sell the big games. The Jets and Giants fans do it all the time. That's why Cowboys fans and Dolphins fans always fill MetLife.
No, they won't do that. They won't do that. They'll do that for the Chargers and the Clippers, but they're not going to do that for the Rams, and they're not going to do it for the Lakers.
Yeah. That's exactly my point. Okay. How disrespectful is that to Kevin Durant? Like,
but that's Kevin's problem. Kevin chose this.
I'm not saying it's not Kevin's
but
problem.
But I don't think that's a disrespect to KD disrespect. As much as it is a disrespect to the organization and the stadium.
You just don't have enough fans.
Let's even tie it all the way back.
They got nothing to do
with KD. Let's tie it all the way back.
Bring it back.
So when KD won finals MVP, right, it became like a little thing that it was still Steph's team. Look, even go back and you could read where KD talked about it. He never felt like it was something that was like his, right? Because the fan base never allowed it to be his. It was always Steph.
Right.
And there was that MVP chant, even when KD was obviously the MVP of the league during those small amount of time he was there.
Yeah.
So you follow that around with now you're coming to a season where KD is at that upper echelon again with Steph, but you're on his home territory, his court.
But that's Allen speaking to the fans. That has nothing to do with KD. KD was never going to be the fan favorite in Golden State because one guy was drafted there, had already won a championship there, was beloved. The other guy came on board late.
Right. You're right, Key. You're
not
right.
Happen.
That goes to my point, though. KD now chose to come to Brooklyn and say, this is mine. I'm going to build this. And then for that to happen there on his home court,
that's because of the player in Steph Curry, the beloved player. They love him.
It goes back to my point about Dame worth the Knicks. Knicks fans wouldn't do that.
That's a great point.
You just said about the Lakers.
But this,
Laker fans wouldn't do that. That goes to show you about Brooklyn fans.
This is why, if you're Durant, in the back of your mind, you're asking yourself, did I really make the right decision? Because the guy I came here to play with, he ain't playing.
Yep.
And I'm in a city where no matter how good we are still the second story. No matter what, the second story.
They won't be the second story if they win a championship.
Yes, they will.
No, they won't.
How could you be?
No,
you just won a championship.
Listen to me. The next day after the parade, the story will be how the Knicks can build a championship contender to take this on.
It doesn't flip overnight. And if the Knicks won a championship, the story would be how can the Nets build a championship?
No, it wouldn't be that. No, it wouldn't. Knicks won a championship.
I agree with you on
we
that.
We would probably all, it would be rapture. We'd be gone.
The Knicks won a championship.
It'll be
the city's
over. That's not going to happen. The city will still be here. It's not going to be over.
Just, no.
Well, I don't know about that.
The city will still be here because the Knicks are not winning a championship.
Really hard. Well, really hard to imagine it. But how about this, though? The Nets are considered a championship contender, though, this year, right?
Yes.
They are. They have all the talent to do it. But their head coach, Steve Nash, already let us know this early in the season, they can't be in that conversation.
Well, I just don't think we're in that category yet. We got a lot of work to do. We're trying to, you know, improve as a group, get better. And, you know, hopefully we can find a way to overcome some of our deficiencies by the end of the year. I think the guys have been great as far as buying into what we want to do defensively. No one would have picked us as a top 10 defense to start the year. We're defending. We're finding a way. I think offensively, we have all these different lineups, different backgrounds, styles of play, 10 new players on our team. It takes time. You know, we started the year with a continuity plan from last year that got thrown out the window, obviously, when Kai didn't come back. So we're trying to build and figure it out. When you play a really good defense, it really tests you. And I think tonight it was a great lesson for us that we got to double down on some of our principles when going gets tough.
What do you think of that honesty from Steve Nash?
I mean, the back half of it, okay, it was like diarrhea of the mouth. I get those are things that coaches say.
That was coach speak.
Understand.
Absolutely.
But the first part of it was pretty appalling to me.
Oh?
Yeah, well, you have two top five players in the NBA on the same team, and you just said that your team is not even in the same category as the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
A team that lost in Klay Thompson doesn't have him back, and they're playing with guys like Gary Payton the second.
True, GP the second. Jordan D.
Yeah, I agree with you,
daddy.
I agree with you, but it's like, wow, that's a hell of an admission. Bill Belichick ever say we're not in the same category? Would he ever give that?
Yeah, he would. He would say that. I mean, a lot of coaches would say that, though. Like, we're not in the same right now. Because even not a coach but a player, and Anthony Davis just said a week ago after the loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves, we're not going to win a championship. It's not going to happen. Based on the way that you're playing, based on what Steve Nash – is looking at with his team, he's assessing his team and saying, we're not, they just ran us out the building. There's nothing, we're not there yet. That's basically what he's saying. Based on the way we playing, we can't win a championship this way. Ain't no way in the world.
I hear what you're saying, Key, but it's not like the Nets are ranked, you know, 13th in the East. They're third in the East.
Yeah, but you're not.
You're saying that the ceiling is still exponentially higher because they're not playing.
Yeah, they're not playing good basketball. You're looking at the record. Is saying, well, they're third in the East, Key. But they're looking at, you should know this, they're looking at the way that they playing, the turnovers, the missed shots, the this, the not defending at the level they should be. They're allowing a guy who does it to everybody to hit 40-footers with no problem at all, bottom of the net. He's just assessing where they're at today. And if they don't get better, and it's a small cry out to Kyrie, and if we don't get better, we ain't going to win no championship. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, and I also think it's a bit of a message sent to your team. Because he knows they're hearing all. They're going to hear that soundbite, and he wants them to hear it.
All
and,
that.
You know, be pissed off
the
by
problem
it
that they're
going to
have is
it.
That continuity system, man. Like how they play, and I said it before, the attention that Steph attracts once he set his foot over half court. Like the way guys cut back door, the way guys move without the ball, the chemistry that that team has.
They're fun to watch.
I don't know
again.
If any other team in the league has that.
Yeah, they're fun to watch again. There's no question about that. Hey, speaking of things that happen in New York, we've got to get to another New York team that's trying to build something and maybe win a championship. But first, let's go to the good. Why are we playing music?
Speaking of New York, we've got another New York team trying to build a title.
I didn't realize
it may be coming up short.
We bring him
first, Buster only. Good. No, good. There you go.
On it. I didn't know we bring it. I didn't know Buster had his own soundtrack.
This is gonna ring right now.
I know it,
Buster. What it is right now? Yeah.
This is what you get for leaving us.
I can't believe you jumped ship.
I jumped ship. Buster only joins us right now on the Goodyear Hotline. Buster, good morning. You have your own walk-up music. I'm sure you love that. Second of all, have a show beef issue going on here.
I don't know if
you're aware of this. So
I'm very aware.
You are very aware. Okay. Well, I apologize in advance.
So, Buster, I just want to read a note to you from Rick and Dave.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they made me write it down because obviously they were very emotional and very hurt, and they feel like they overstepped the boundary. So they just wanted to say they apologize for everything. They would love to have you back on the show. And whatever you need, Buster, they are willing to make it work. So they are trying to meet you more than halfway, more like 90%, and they admit they were wrong, and they're sorry.
I would suggest this. Just have the show producer, reach out and say, do you want to come on the show, right? Because I've been aware of this. But I'm waiting for the request to come on, and otherwise, you guys know this, mornings, you got schedules, you got kids, you got stuff you're going on. And then when I heard about this early this morning, I was getting text messages. I'm like, you know what? This is kind of fun. I'm curious to see what direction they go with this before I come on with you guys.
They went desperation. By the way, though, you could be honest, though. Did Dave Rothenberg take it too far when, you know, he got excited about you DMing him? And then he asked for your personal number. Did he take that too far?
No, but I thought it was kind of funny and a little bit odd because, everybody in our industry, you know, we all work at ESPN, we can all get each other's phone numbers. Like, Jay, you know, Key, I can reach out to folks at the news and say, hey, can I get their phone number? I got to run something past them. And so that's why I just thought it was kind of funny that he asked him, dude, ask your producer. He's got my number.
Very odd. But they are both the problem is, of course, they're Mets fans. So, you know, they don't really know how to act right now. And you could argue that maybe the Mets didn't know how to act either because it took them forever to finally get a general manager. And they might have lost a player by waiting so long. So why did it take so long? Is it really that many of the candidates just didn't want to work in New York, as Sandy Alderson said?
Guys, they flat out blew that part of it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, think about it. They knew when Jared Porter was kicked out of baseball last February, they knew at that point they needed front office help. They knew they would need to get somebody. And the part that surprised me was that as these names cycled through, you know, Theo Epstein and David Stearns and Billy Bean, was that I you know, was talking to people in August and asking them the question, do you think this person could, you know, wind up with the Mets? I'm going, nope, nope, nope. And I don't know why they took them so long to get through that part of the process, because, yes, you can't speak to someone directly, but you can have off-the-record conversations and feel it out and work around the edges. And they literally lost weeks in waiting to make that happen. I don't think it cost them Noah Syndergaard. And I think the Mets, because he, as in coming back from Tommy John surgery, barely pitched in 2021, that they were a little bit queasy giving in that qualifying offer of $18.4 million. And they weren't willing to go on to go beyond that salary. And look, it's a no-loss situation for them in a sense, in that they're going to get draft pick compensation for Syndergaard now. And for the Mets, it was a good decision to offer him that. But I don't understand why it took so long for them to get to this point where it looks like now they're going to have Billy Epler in place as general manager.
So, Buster, you know, the Yankees are out there sniffing around shortstop land in L.A. And, you know, the pursuit of Corey Seager, which I don't know what we're doing. And then we got Carlos Correa out there. What's the latest on the shortstop money that's out there?
Yeah, and so from what I understand, the Yankees and other teams have absolutely blanched at the asking prices on Seager and on Correa. And that doesn't mean they won't necessarily circle back and do something, but I think the numbers, I think maybe are at the moment concerning for them. When you're talking about Correa and Seager asking for 10 years and asking for, you know, north of $300 million, with Aaron Judge's situation having to be resolved either this winter or before he becomes a free agent next fall, I don't know if they'll go there. Yes, I do think they're going to wind up with one of the, you know, the elite shortstops in the marketplace. You know, the other two options besides Correa and Seager are Trevor Story, Marcus Semien are two other guys to look at. I think the Yankees will go there, and I think they're going to spend big on a starting pitcher. And I'm sure you guys have heard all about, you know, their conversations with Justin Verlander to this point. If they wound up with Verlander and say, you know, Semien or Trevor Story, that wouldn't surprise me.
Why is Seager? Why aren't we trying to retain him? Is the money just too? Is it too rich for us?
Who's we?
L.A. Dodgers. I'm sorry.
It's interesting because in late in the season, a lot of folks, you know, talking to Dodger people, felt like, you know what, Seager's going to move on, that the two sides would not work something out. I'm hearing more confidence, actually, in the last 48 hours that the Dodgers are going to be right down to the wire. Now, the team to watch in the Seager situation are the Texas Rangers. You know, they're trying to redo their roster. They're trying to redo their culture. Their manager, Chris Woodward, is very close with Seager from his time as a Dodger coach. You know, folks I talked to yesterday were more confident that Seager's going to wind up back with the Dodgers. Just a question of L.A. making the choices, Key, with what they're going to do with their roster.
No, I know. I asked that because a couple years ago, Machado, we had that whole Machado-Seager coming off an injury. What would we do? And then we kept Seager, let Machado go. But now, all of a sudden, Seager getting ready to leave us a couple years later. But you know how it is, Buster.
Buster, I do want to ask you, how much do you think Correa's latest comments that Derek Jeter should not have won a single gold glove would hurt him if the Yankees do sign him?
None. I think that stuff doesn't make any difference at all. It comes down to asking price and whether or not the Yankees are comfortable with the number. You know, Correa, without a doubt, among the elite shortstops, had the best year. It felt like he was putting an audition tape together during the postseason. He was so good. Leadership, offense, defense. He's, you know, among the shortstop candidates. He's one of the guys who you can say, yeah, he's going to be a shortstop for years to come. He's the youngest of the group. But there are questions in the industry about his physical state and whether or not, you know, lower back issues he's had in his career are something to be concerned about long term. And so, yeah, if Carlos Correa came to the Yankees and said, look, I want to work this out with you no matter what, you know, I'll take a lot less money to sign with you guys, I think they absolutely would work through that and all the, you know, the fan backlash about the sign stealing. But I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I think Carlos is going to wind up with a huge number.
Why would he even say that, though? Like, what would make somebody say something like that to a fan base?
A better question.
You have a chance to go play for.
But that's that withstanding, Buster, you were front and center for Jeter's pretty much his entire career. is I've seen people come up with analytics that say, yeah, actually Jeter wasn't a very good shortstop, wasn't a good defensive shortstop. What do you say to those types of comments? Because Correa's not the first one to say it. He's just the first player to say it, which obviously got a lot of attention.
And, Jay, your question is dead on. Like, I've known Carlos a long time, and I would ask him that very question. Why would you bring that up now? Because
yeah.
Most of the time, as you guys know, when these free agents hit the market, they don't talk to anybody. Like, they're not saying anything to anybody because they don't want to, you know, raise questions like, hey, for the Yankees, for the New York fan base, is that the direction they want to go? Yeah, during Jeter's career, the perception was he was at his best an average shortstop, that there were times there was a feeling that his offensive production actually helped him win a Gold Glove Award. But I will also tell you this, in many conversations with folks in the Red Sox front office and the players saying, with two outs in the ninth inning, who would you most want to hit the ball to? And the answer was Derek among shortstops. They had enormous respect for him. Yeah, they knew that there were probably plays that he wasn't making that other shortstops were making, but they also thought it wasn't like you looked at the Yankees and said, yeah, they struggled in this time period because of Derek's defense.
Yeah, clutch, right? That's one thing you really can't
exactly
measure, is just how big the big plays that he did make in the right moments. Buster, great to talk to you as always. Thanks so much, and you know we'll do our best trying to mend this relationship you have with DiPietro.
Hey, Buster, I want you to know I just sent you a DM asking you for your number.
Thank you. Geez. God, guys. Crazy. Thank you.
All right, Buster. Buster, only on the Goodyear Hotline. Keyshawn, J. Will, Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up, a defensive guru? Is that reputation or reality for one NFL coach? Key. We'll have the answer next. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio and Sirius XM, Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
KJM, ESPN Radio, Alan Hahn in for Max. What happened? Are you DMing somebody now?
No, I don't do. I don't have social media.
No.
Never had. They were asking for certain things during the break, and I wanted to help them out. That's all.
No. It's all truth there.
They were asking for certain things. I wanted to direct them and make sure they went in the right direction.
Yes, I saw what Key was talking about. I said, I see the diversity. Yes.
Yeah. I see.
Thank you.
Well,
I'm on the right track.
As you hear Evan Wheeler's voice, it is time for reputation or reality, Evan.
Yeah, this is my time to ask Key anything.
Ooh.
Ask Key Anything, brought to you by Goldman Sachs. Open a high-yield online savings account from Marcus, Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC.
Great sponsor.
Robert Saleh is a defensive guru. Is that his reputation or is that reality, Ooh. Key?
You know, this is a tough one because he's a new head coach that he hadn't really have a full deal going yet. I would say right now it's all based on his reputation. Even though he doesn't have everything that he needs at his disposal right today. I haven't seen enough in the defense, even though they beat Tennessee and they beat Cincinnati, that makes me believe that everything is headed in the right direction. There's certain things that you could see that you go, oh, okay, if they get this player, that player, they're going to be really good. I think right now it's a little bit of the reputation side of things that he's kind of dealing with.
I would agree with you. You know, coaches are only as good as the players. They have to have some dudes on their team defensively. But I think one of the things that I've seen from the Jets this year is just the lack of fight, the lack of passion that I think I've been able to see from Urban Meyer's team in the Jags. At least it looks like they want to play defense. I'm not saying that the Jets players don't. I just don't see that same kind of drive that you would see from Urban Meyer's team.
Totally reputation. I mean, come on. I mean, the proof's in the pudding. Put up the numbers, then we start believing it, then it becomes reality.
As Rex said, he's used to finishing last. He'll probably finish last again this year.
Oh, my goodness.
At least he's used to it.
You guys are Jets.
Not wrong.
Jay, Michael Jordan, better scorer than Kevin Durant. Is that reputation or is that reality?
Reputation. KD is 7 feet tall, can do all the things with the ball that a guard can do. And it's easy for me to say KD is the most prolific offensive scorer in the history of the game. And I can say it with a straight face.
I said he was the best 7-footer in the history of the game, and people came at me.
I don't know why.
Like
I said
it was an awful take because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar needed Jay Williams to give him the basketball. KD doesn't need that. What 7-footer in the history of the game does what Kevin Durant does?
Here's what I'm going to say.
No one.
Here's what I'm going to say. You can't talk basketball without talking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So let's stop.
That's a fact.
That's not what I said, though.
I understand that, but let's just stop.
It's a different conversation.
That's not even a conversation.
Not the question.
Both of y'all be quiet. Let's just stop there, Alan. In terms of the Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant comparison, they never played against each other. It's different era and different times. Michael Jordan didn't have to take a ton of threes. He didn't have to do those sort of things. He went to the cup because he could. Nobody could defend him.
It's worth asking if the three had the same value it did today, in today's game, would Michael Jordan have developed into a great three-point shooter?
Well, think about it. He developed into a lot of things that he wasn't in Once Upon a Time.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, that is right.
He was a great, he was great at evolving his game.
Now you may speak, Mr. Hahn.
Now I get permission. I've already spoken. I made my case about the best seven-footer.
I mean, comparing two skill sets like that, wow, what a hell of a conversation.
Let's stay in the NBA. Alan Hahn, Steph Curry, greatest three-point shooter of all time, reputation or reality?
That's straight up reality. He's on pace to make 445 three-pointers. When he set the all-time record of 402, his own previous record was 286. So, like, what he's doing is off the charts as a shooter in a game that the three-pointer is more valued now than ever before in the history of the game. So because of it, yes, greatest three-point shooter.
Was waiting to get in there. Yeah. Then his arm died.
Dude. As they say, dude. Seriously? We're talking about three-pointer, Jay. The damn league was discussing or turning it into a four-pointer, moving it back more because of dudes like this.
Shouldn't they? Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, Jay.
This is not even a question.
Should we add a four-point line?
Oh, from an entertainment perspective, ooh, I would love it.
It would be ugly, though. Bad shooters be trying to shoot for the four-point line.
Well, there are guys that talk more about skill set.
Man, think about it. Draymond trying to pull up from the four-point line. He shot a three last night. It looked like it was even with the rim. It went in, though.
He made it.
I was like, damn, he looked like me out there.
The change in strategy, though, that it would cause with, like, two possession game now being a 5-point game. Yeah. Like, I need it.
But that conversation only means nothing. My whole point is that conversation only came up because of Steph Curry.
Agreed.
That conversation never came up for Reggie Miller or nobody else. Yeah. Only for Steph Curry. Mm-hmm.
I think, though, if you allow kids to play with that, you will have more players that will become more adaptable to that distance from the rim. I mean, Dame could shoot from there. LaMelo could shoot from there.
Shoot the ball from half court.
The first CYO game you go to where a kid just stops at half court and just starts chucking.
That's exactly what would happen. So the four-point, what's the three-point line now? Like, how far back is it?
I guess 24 and a half.
So then,
more than the May, I don't know.
Now they're going to be moving that thing back to what? What are you going to get? If you got 24 or something like that, they're going to move it back to
27, 28 maybe?
You'd have 30. To go, no, I think 30.
Now, all of a sudden, instead of shooting it right at the 30.
And you couldn't take it in the corners, obviously. It's only above the break.
Yeah, so now all of a sudden, instead of shooting at 30, they're going to be backing up to 40, which is basically the half court.
22-foot three-point.
It's 22
line.
Now?
So imagine, they're going to be, instead of shooting it at the four, they're going to be backing up even further.
I don't even know the dimensions of an NBA court.
You're like, hey, the Harlem Globetrotters.
You don't need to when you can just.
All right, Alan.
Football field's 100 yards, guys. 120 if you include the end zones. We know that. The Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. Is that reputation or reality, Key?
I think it's reality right now, today. Today it's reality, although Tennessee Titans are 8-2, but it's a different type of 8-2. If they had Derrick Henry on their team and they were 8-2 and he was there, and I would say that's the case. But I can't say that's the case because Derrick Henry isn't there and Adrian Peterson is the running back right now. And AP, come on, man. I mean, I love AP. Cool. He good for a two-yard plunge. But that's really it.
It's reputation. Titans are playing the best in that conference right now. But if the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Dallas Cowboys this weekend, I will give the nod to the Chiefs.
Yeah, their rep is based on, again, the demonstrated performance. And that's what we're seeing. And we just saw what they looked like last week. If we see more of it, it'll be hard to say no. It becomes reality.
All right, last one. Alabama quarterbacks can't play in the NFL. Reputation or reality, Key?
Reality.
What?
You only got one dude doing good. One guy. Mac Jones. Well, that's the only one.
Are we not including Jalen Hurts?
Jalen Hurts went to Oklahoma, man. Stop trying to give them something that they can't claim. You cannot claim that. His most success, or his, is that
one
the right way I said?
Year.
Exactly.
He was mostly that's not easy. Nope. Which one am I looking for?
Remix.
Keep finding it. Keep searching.
Most of his success came from Oklahoma in his last year. He was drafted based on Oklahoma, not on Alabama.
He was there for one year.
He developed at Oklahoma.
He was a starter on a national championship team.
He lost his starting job
in the game.
And he never regained it again.
But he was still
among the best
players in the country that year.
Okay. He and Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
Lost his starting job. You don't have the right to claim him because he had his most successful season.
There you go.
At Oklahoma. You don't get to claim that. Even if his degree is from Alabama.
So Jalen Hurts, trash. Like, not a good quarterback.
No. He's not from Alabama. He's from Oklahoma. This is an Alabama question.
So Tua is no good. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I ain't.
You don't rock with him.
Do you think the Dolphins think he good? So why are they flirting with all these other quarterbacks?
Clearly do not. It's
exactly.
Wrong. You can still be good. You're just not elite.
No, you can still be. He can still be good. But I think, first of all.
I just say that, Kika, sometimes when you and I, knowing the levels to it, when we say, you know, he ain't that good, like people,
no,
like fans are like, oh, yeah, he's a bum. I'm like, oh, he's not
a
bum.
No, he's a pro.
Does Nick Saban talk about Jalen Hurts like he's one of my guys?
Nobody ever really talks to him about Jalen Hurts.
Would he?
He would, if the conversation comes up, what Nick would say is Jalen Hurts is a stand-up guy.
Then, question's answered. Positive. He's an Alabama quarterback.
No, but the high school coach is going to talk about him. The Georgia coaches.
Right, Alabama, can they be the first two-loss playoff team? Should they?
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
KJM, ESPN Radio. Alan on hand for Max, and we go right now to the Goodyear Hotline because we have the college football playoff rankings that come out, and really no changes, but still a lot to discuss with this because there could be a change. Actually, there could be a change in a record that doesn't change the ranking. So we go to our expert, Heather Dinich, who joins us right now on the Goodyear Hotline. Heather, what is your biggest takeaway from the last night's rankings? I know there's no changes, but did you have an opinion on why there were no changes?
Well, I mean, I think it's just because everybody won and there wasn't a lot to really move anything except for, obviously, Oklahoma. And so, to me, that was the one glaring message, which is the Sooners are toast. I mean, they are out of reach of the college football playoff. And if the Big 12 is going to have a hope at putting somebody in the top four, that rests on the shoulders now of Oklahoma State. And Gary Barta talked yesterday about how much they like Oklahoma State's defense, but also noted the progress that they've been making offensively as well. The question that I have moving forward is how much does a win against Oklahoma do for Oklahoma State? Because clearly that's been devalued as Oklahoma has now dropped behind some two-loss teams.
13th. Heather's rankings reaction is brought to you by Wendy's right now. Wendy's, try their brand new fries for yourself with fries that are guaranteed to be hot and crispy, or they'll replace them at our participating U.S. Wendy's.
Heather, you had suggested that the committee could, but probably wouldn't, put Michigan ahead of Cincinnati. In the end, they ultimately kept the teams at 5 and 6 in those spots. Why didn't they make the bonehead decision to make that leapfrog?
Well, the win against Notre Dame on the road still carries a lot of weight in that committee meeting room. I mean, that is really what Cincinnati is hanging its hat on at this point, because Gary Barta said last night that every week Cincinnati's strength of schedule, which is 101st in the country right now, continues to be a topic of discussion in that room. And while Michigan got a gritty win against Penn State, the Nittany Lions remain unranked, obviously. They do consider it a good win, but there was not a lot of discussion about any degree of closeness between Michigan and Cincinnati at this point.
Heather, Kirk Herbstreit and Joey Galloway discussed the possibility of a two-loss Alabama team getting into the playoffs. What's the path for that to actually happen?
Well, I certainly wouldn't rule it out, especially as Alabama has been sitting there at number two pretty steady. But given that Gary Barta said last night that there was a lot of discussion about 2, 3, and 4, more so than in past weeks, it leads me to question just how secure Alabama is in that number two spot. And while I do believe that there's a possibility that a two-loss Bama can get in this thing, I think it has to be an absolute thriller, an instant classic, in order for them to justify it. Now, if Alabama goes and beats Georgia, I think you see two SEC teams without any hesitation. But if it's the other way around, I think it's going to be increasingly difficult for them to justify that. But I will say that it's hard to answer that in a vacuum without knowing, are we talking about a two-loss Oregon that wins the Pac-12 and a two-loss Big 12 champ? And does Cincinnati lose to Houston and the American Athletic Conference championship game? Because all of those things will help answer that question if that's how that scenario unfolds.
Heather, as we're talking about, you know, these rankings, and this is really the focus has been on Cincinnati, the season they've had, and this group of five, which, by the way, can they come up with a better name? You go from Power Five to Group of Five. It's very condescending, in my opinion. Meanwhile, we are wondering where, you know, where they will end up, right? And the feeling is that it's almost like no matter what they do, like you just mentioned, some people are thinking Alabama can have two losses and still get in. Is this a message? If Cincinnati does what they're supposed to do and they still can't get into the top four, is that simply a message to the group of five? Like, no matter what you do, you will never really have a chance to play for a national championship.
You know, it's hard to say that if it doesn't happen this year, it's not going to happen, right? And on December 1st, the 10 FBS commissioners and Jack Swarbrick, who comprise the CFP's management committee, are going to meet again in person in Dallas to talk about playoff expansion. And of course, what's happening and unfolding this season is part of those conversations, but that decision to expand the playoff is not going to be made on a knee-jerk reaction based on what happens to Cincinnati. And I should note, that meeting is going to happen the day after the fifth of six rankings is revealed. So it's certainly going to be a part of the conversation. I mean, you have group of five commissioners in there, and Mike Oresko of the American Athletic Conference will agree with you 100%. He, of course, also hates the phrase group of five.
Right.
But, you know, it's all part of it. If Cincinnati doesn't get in, especially because they're sitting there at the number five spot, and Gary Barta said last night that there has been no consideration whatsoever, no discussion in that committee meeting room to this point about jumping Notre Dame over Cincinnati in spite of that head-to-head, that you would have to think common sense says they need one more upset and we could see history.
Heather, there are seven, you know, top seven teams that play this weekend. I know one of mine I know is going to be on upset alert for me. Which one of these top seven are on upset alert for you this weekend?
Well, to me, it's Oregon.
Yes.
And see, same page. There we go. Look, ESPN's Football Power Index gives them less than a 40% chance to win at Utah. Utah's a top 25 team. They are a gritty team. These two teams could see each other again in the Pac-12 championship game. But that is a tough game. That's the most difficult remaining game on Oregon's schedule. And if they lose, they have two Pac-12 losses, and one is a bad loss to Stanford. So that is, I mean, like gut instinct, they're out, right? But again, you have to see how it all plays out.
Heather, we got to leave it right there. Thanks so much, as always. All the best.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Heather Dinich brought to you by Eckrich Smoked Sausage, real MVP for any tailgate. Pick it up at your local grocer. Coming up, Loudmouth Player, Loudmouth New York Sports Talk Radio. That's next.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.